If you have a smart speaker, you have access to the entire world of NPR and St. Louis Public Radio. All the latest news and all the captivating stories. Activate our voices with yours by telling your smart speaker to play St. Louis Public Radio.
From St. Louis Public Radio. This is Politically Speaking.
There are 8 Republicans running to become Missouri's next Secretary of State. While half of them filed early for the position, the other half decided to run in the last few days of the filing period. Jamie Corley is one of those 4 candidates who threw her hat into the ring in the final days. She says then-candidate Senate President Pro Tem Caleb Rowden dropping out was an impetus for her decision to run. Corley has been in the news for filing an initiative petition that would have legalized abortion in Missouri, which she later withdrew. Unlike some of her fellow candidates, Corley doesn't believe it should be harder to amend Missouri's Constitution. Let's hit the music.
This is the Politically Speaking podcast, the definitive show about Missouri politics.
My promise to St. Louis was that I would do the absolute most for each and every person, starting with those who have the very least.
What I wanted to do was look and see what other states are doing.
We have to be willing to change those laws, that they are balanced and they affect everybody equally.
As somebody that grew up in the St. Louis area, in North St. Louis County, I didn't know any lawyers growing up.
We got to find long-term solutions to make government better, but also to be able to provide services to people.
I don't want to leave that federal money that we've been leaving all these years on the table.
We need to be spending this money to take care of Missourians.
I thought we accomplished a lot this year, but a lot more needs to be done.
And welcome to Politically Speaking. I'm your host, St. Louis Public Radio Statehouse and politics reporter Sarah Kellogg. Joining me is my co-host in St. Louis. He is St. Louis Public Radio's political correspondent,
Jason Rosenbaum.
And our guest today, she is one of the 8 Republicans seeking to become Missouri's next Secretary of State,
Jamie Corley.
Thank you so much for being on the show, and let's get right into it. We have a lot of questions. So first of all, for our listeners, tell us a little bit about yourself and what is your background in politics and Missouri politics?
Yep. So Jamie Corley, born and raised, 5th generation Missourian. And after graduating from high school, because in St. Louis, everybody wants to know, as Jason is rolling his eyes at me.
Which high school did you go to?
Yeah, I went to MICDS.
Okay.
After graduating, spent a long time in public policy and in politics. Worked on the Hill for a long time, for 3 members of Congress doing press, and then moved out after a pretty significant medical event. I moved out to San Francisco, as all, you know, conservatives do, and did a couple different things there. Had a media company, worked at Stanford in a think tank, conservative think tank at Stanford, then moved back home. And in 2020, I moved back home and then got really involved, actually, in an initiative petition to change the abortion law in Missouri. So right now I'm the executive director of the Missouri Women and Family Research Fund. It's a 501c4 nonprofit that does advocacy for Missouri women and families.
We have multiple questions on that initiative petition in a second. But first, what drew you to the Secretary of State race in particular? Why did you decide to run for it?
Yeah. So, you know, when Senator Caleb Rowden dropped out, I looked at, because I worked so closely with the Secretary of State's office during my initiative petition process, that I was very keen on who was going to be the Secretary of State in the 2024 and beyond. And I looked at the candidates and I did not see anyone who I would vote for. And I talked to a few people initially thinking, if we have to run an IP next year, what are we going to do? I don't feel confident that anybody on the ballot is competent enough to, you know, really be somebody who can make sure the voters' voices heard on IP reform. So I had a lot of conversations, quick conversations. It was a quick turnaround. And I decided that I'm going to put my name on the ballot. And that's what I did. Drove down to Jefferson City.
To expand on that initiative petition, so you have been in the news since that initiative petition that would have legalized abortion within the Missouri Constitution. Why did you file this petition, and why did you ultimately withdraw it?
So I filed, let's just start with Missouri has one of the strictest abortion laws in the country that is a total ban on abortion with no exceptions for rape and incest. I am conservative, and I found that very dangerous for women and families. That was not anything that I saw as pro-life. And so I also, at the other hand, saw Missourians for Constitutional Freedom and what they had introduced a couple months prior, and I found those too extreme for Missouri. So my group, we put together a ballot initiative that would have legalized abortion in the first trimester with exceptions for rape and incest. So a solution to the current ban, which is deeply unpopular and dangerous for families, but something that is in line with Missouri voters. So we did the whole process. We introduced it. We did ballot language. You know, we started collecting signatures. And then Missourians for Constitutional Freedom, which was kind of regarded as a stalled campaign, got a massive influx of out-of-state money.
Yeah, because they had resolved their internal impasse about whether they were going to have a fetal viability language or nothing at all. And they went with fetal viability language. Planned Parenthood, which had been pushing for no fetal viability language, basically capitulated and decided to get on board with it. And it's raised a ton of money since then.
Right. So having two amendments on the ballot with the same subject is really impractical.
Do you think, as someone who has advocated even for limited abortion access in Missouri, because you were chastised by the left, you were chastised by the right, but like, let's focus on the right here. They're going to be like, you tried to legalize abortion in Missouri. You don't align with where the Missouri Republican Party is on this issue, and therefore you're going to be automatically disqualified to be Secretary of State.
Right.
What would you say about that?
I would say I'm aligned with Donald Trump that I think abortion bans go way too far. And I know this from conversations. I know this from polling and data. I've studied this extensively, that I believe I am spot on with Republicans in Missouri, that abortion bans go way too far. No exceptions for rape and incest is something that most Republicans don't even think is an option. Republicans, including Senator Josh Hawley, Senator Eric Schmidt, when they talk about being pro-life, they always talk about exceptions for rape, incest, life of the mother. So I actually feel like I have an incredibly strong conservative position on abortion that's aligned with the party and aligned with Donald Trump.
So you mentioned before that you looked at the field and you didn't feel like there was anybody you could support, probably because you didn't think anybody was qualified to be Secretary of State. Because the reason I ask that is someone like Shane Scholer would strongly push back against the idea that he's not qualified to be Secretary of State when he's been an elections official for the last decade.
Yeah. I think I was looking at the people who had fundraised, which was really, do you have a viable campaign as well? Shane Scholer is very well respected in Republican politics. And, you know, he's a Greene County clerk and he would absolutely be qualified. So, you know, and I'll also expand that comment to, you know, the field now. One of the talking points that I use when I'm on the campaign trail and talking to people is the fact that I'm not a former or current member of the Missouri legislature sets me apart from this field. And for me, that's a huge plus. It's a huge advantage. The best predictor of future success is past results. And if I was a part of the last 2 years of nonsense in the Missouri legislature, I would be embarrassed to ask someone for a promotion, especially Missouri voters.
And what do you think you would offer as Secretary of State that is different from the seven other Republicans running for the post?
Right. So, I mean, there's a couple specifics. So I have no intention of using the Secretary of State's office to essentially enact de facto IP reform. I am a supporter of using the ballot initiative process. I think that it is part of our Constitution, and voters in Missouri have used the process to make substantial changes to our Constitution. We're proud of our initiative petition process. So, I mean, that's a huge marker of how I'm different.
Let's jump on that then and talk about the initiative petition process. We have that later in the show plan, but let's go right now. And so as Secretary of State, I want to make sure this is clear. You would not advocate for the Constitution becoming harder to amend.
I would actually do the opposite. I would make sure that people know I am a Secretary of State that will respond to groups and voters who want to use their constitutional right to change statutes and change the Constitution.
And then I want to ask a question also about changing state statute, because a lot of the questions is, well, why do Missourians go to the the constitutional route all the time? Well, right now, there's really nothing stopping from the voters voting on a statute change, changing something in November, but then the state legislature turning around and undoing it or modifying it literally like 2 months later. And so would you support, a state law or changes, at least for a period of time, to protect a voter passed state statutes from being, changed on a major basis?
I think that's an interesting question, and it would certainly put less pressure on constitutional amendments. So I can see the reason why that would be appropriate. It's certainly something that I would, obviously that's up to the legislature, but it's certainly something that I would be open to. I mean, it makes sense.
Yeah, because that's something one of the other candidates, Representative Adam Schwandren, says, that he thinks that there would be a lesser, attempts to modify the Constitution if they know that voters, if they vote for a statute change and then it wouldn't get changed, well, they can get it done that way instead of having to put it on the Constitution. Do you kind of agree with that logic?
Well, but I would say that usually voters use this process because the legislature isn't doing what they want. Either they're not prioritizing issues that they want done, or there's just no appetite for making smaller changes like raising the minimum wage. And so I think my question is, whether it's 2 months or a year, would it, the incentive or the problem still remains that the legislature could undo what the citizens have to do via initiative petition process, whether it's a statute or a constitution, because they have been unable to successfully lobby their representatives to get the change.
Let's go to the Missourians for Constitutional Freedom Initiative again. At this point, when we're recording this, we don't know officially whether it's going to be on the ballot, but I'd say it's likely. Like, they turned in a lot of signatures. It was a very professional signature gathering campaign. There is kind of this feeling that, like, if that ends up passing, that could really, like, end the whole drive to make the Constitution harder to amend for the foreseeable future. Because there are people who have real problems with that amendment, and real, like, and not just imaginary ones. They feel like it will pretty much decimate every abortion restriction imaginable, and they may want to try to repeal it or change it. So do you agree that, like, this entire discussion about quote-unquote IP reform could be dead for the foreseeable future, depending on what happens in November?
I think, depending on what happens. And I would add, I have concerns about the amendment. And I think that, to answer your question, though, yes, I think it could be dead in the legislature. But again, we have been hearing from other people in this race that they will use their power as the Secretary of State to essentially create a de facto limitation on IP reform. And I know what that can look like, because I've been through this process. It can look like inflammatory ballot language that you really have, you either have to throw in the towel or you have to go to court. It's extremely expensive. It's very time consuming. It's a total waste of taxpayer dollars. It's completely politicized.
And it also allows like Chuck Hatfield to build another pool in this house. Chuck
was my attorney. Yes. You know, he is the best. And so, you know, we love Chuck and Alex. But that's right. You know, but for me, it is just such a waste of time because it also doesn't work. Look what happened to the ballot initiative process with the Missourians for Constitutional Freedom. It got decided in the courts and it's going on the ballot. I mean, it's not as inflammatory, obviously, than what Secretary Ashcroft had originally written. But there's other things you can do. You can make it, you should scrutinize the signature gathering process. That's really important, actually. But you can make life very, very difficult, or you have discretion when you're the Secretary of State over this.
You know, if the legislature next year, no matter what the vote is like in November, if it's on the ballot or not, if they once again try to put forward a proposal that would make it harder to amend the Constitution, do you think that voters would actually approve of any sort of proposal like that? Because
no.
It's failed flat in Ohio and Arkansas, and neither of them are, you know, blue utopias here.
No, I do not think that voters would pass this in any way, shape, or form. And in fact, in an alternative universe, if had IP reform actually made it to the ballot, that would have been a very fun campaign to run Oppo on as a former press secretary, because it's just such low-hanging fruit. Taking away the people's voice, empowering the legislature at the expense of the people. It's just, no, they're not going to do that.
We need to take a quick break, but we'll be right back.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.
And we're back on Politically Speaking with our guest, Jamie Corley. She is one of eight Republicans vying to be the next Secretary of State. Let's move on to other factors of the office, which includes monitoring securities, mm-hmm. registering businesses, and overseeing elections. Why are you qualified to do these parts of the job?
Yeah, so a couple things. We'll go to the registering businesses. I have LLCs registered with the state. I also have operated businesses in other states, in California and in D.C., and any business owner will know that working with the Secretary of State's office can be a streamlined process or it can be a nightmare. And the interaction does not just stop as soon as you register and upload your articles of incorporation. I mean, you have to go on the Secretary of State's website and get a certificate of good standing if you want to get insurance, if you want to open up a brick and mortar store. So it's actually like a pretty good process in Missouri. The portal is easy to use. You know, you can get the documentation that you need as a business owner. But I have firsthand experience. You know, I've also voted in other states, and I voted in California, which is a mess. So I have the experience of seeing how elections are run in other states, and it makes me grateful, actually, that, you know, Secretary Ashcroft and I have certainly sparred over ballot initiative. He's done a really good job of making sure our elections are secure and that people feel confident that their vote is counted. It's counted once and it's not counted more or less than someone else's. What's the other one? Business registration?
Securities.
And right.
I've said this on other shows. I don't know enough about securities, about like how right. you would regulate them other than I will crack down on bad ones. But do you have any ideas on how you would change that part of the office?
Right. So, you know, I worked for senior members of the House Banking Committee and the House Bank or in the Senate Banking Committee. So I have a working understanding of banking policies. I think you're right. I have a 96-year-old grandmother. My directive toward that division would be protect senior citizens from bad actors, from fraud. There are some more nuanced areas where the Missouri Secretary of State plays a role. One of them is ESGs, and those are regulations around what investors can invest in. They get so for example, can you invest in a climate change company even if your reasoning for investing isn't to maximize investor return, that there's a social welfare element? And I have a little bit of a different view than other people in this race, I assume. Well, for one, that should be up to the legislature. If we in Missouri want to restrict, or it's not really restrict, it's monitoring and adding regulations to how investors treat these ESGs, then the legislature needs to do that. And guess what? They couldn't get it over the finish line the last year. So that's why Secretary Ashcroft is the only Secretary of State in the country to move forward with these rules around regulating. My stance is, as a capitalist and somebody who believes in free markets, that if woke billionaires want to invest their money in climate change companies, great, have at it. Not how I'm going to invest my money. Obviously, when it comes down to retirement accounts, you know, we need to have some oversight. But really, this is about duplicative, and I'm getting in the weeds here, but this stuff's important. This is about duplicative regulations. We don't need to, you know, for political purposes, be piling on. If Trump is elected, he's talked about this on the campaign trail. I have every belief that he will monitor and make sure some of this nonsense with ESGs and the markets isn't happening. But in the Secretary of State's office, we really need to be focusing on protecting seniors from fraud. Everybody from fraud, but especially seniors, especially my 96-year-old grandmother.
Maybe an area where the Secretary of State has received more attention as of late is libraries. Mm-hmm. It should be noted that the Secretary of State does not run or control libraries, but they can provide state funding for them. And Secretary Ashcroft talked on this program a while ago about rules around placement of what he deemed to be inappropriate material for children. What did you think of this idea, and would you have handled it differently?
I would have handled it differently, but I want to preface that by saying nobody wins when our libraries become political battlegrounds. And I think both parties are using libraries as political battlegrounds. And I really hate to see that, because as Secretary of State, I want more kids to go to the library. I want more families to go to the library. I grew up going to the library. But at the same time, I'm for parents' rights, and parents need to know if their kids are being exposed to age inappropriate material. I do agree with Secretary Ashcroft on that. What I have read and heard from librarians is that the rules were very confusing. The guidance was very confusing and very murky, and the consequences of not following said guidance were pretty severe. I mean, cutting funding from state libraries is very serious for communities. So I think there needed to be a lot more clarification of what exactly constitutes inappropriate books or events and things like that. So I understand and agree with somewhat of the premise that, you know, we have to make sure that kids aren't being exposed to inappropriate stuff. But it needs to be clarified in a way that doesn't curtail the purpose of libraries, which is to help kids read and get access to education and resources that a lot of kids don't have anywhere else but the library.
I think that the issue here is that you kind of hit on it, that the concept of what is appropriate and inappropriate can be very subjective.
Right.
Like, I'll hearken back to a classic episode of Politically Speaking with Ashcroft, where, you know, he was like, no, would I want my children to be exposed to like hardcore pornography? And the answer is obviously no.
Right.
But if we're talking about like a children's book that explains that some families happen to have parents who are of the same sex, and it just says that that's the case, and it tries to inform children of that reality, yeah, some people are going to be offended by that, but other people could be like, well, this is pretty banal, and it's not worth like losing state funding over. Like, can you kind of address the subjectiveness point?
Well, that to me could be solved with making sure parents know what is available in the library. So I go back to exactly kind of what you said. Different families have different tolerance for what they want their kids to see. And I'm of course very supportive of that. But what I hear from parents is they don't want to be caught off guard, right? And so maybe that is a list of books that need to be provided to parents or to provided to families. Maybe there's something where, you know, something that provides transparency so that parents can be armed with their own knowledge. They can take that knowledge and do with it what they will. There will, of course, be parents who say, like, this doesn't bother me whatsoever. Other parents would maybe think twice about taking their kids to a certain section of the library, and that's up to them.
One of the ideas that's been broached in this campaign is hand counting ballots mm-hmm. instead of putting them through election machines. What do you think of this idea?
Great auditing tool cannot be how we count ballots in the state. So my goal as Secretary of State, and this is the goal of everybody running, is election integrity, making sure that our elections are safe, secure, and free from waste, fraud, and abuse. Hand counting ballots, not safe, not secure, does not limit waste, fraud, and abuse. So it doesn't make sense. But of course, as an auditing tool, it's absolutely important. I think it's mandated if it's within a margin of error, I think 5%, that you have to, you know, go in and hand count ballots. I also believe that we need paper ballots. We need that paper trail. I think that's very important. How we store those is very important. That is a security concern also, something that I want us to, you know, as Secretary of State, that I want to make sure that we have proper security protocols in place for physical storage of those ballots. But, you know, we have a system where, you know, you vote on a machine. It's not connected to the internet. So I wouldn't replace that with counting ballots.
One of the biggest changes during the Ashcroft administration was the implementation of an early voting period where you can go in person to a designated place and cast your ballot for any reason. What do you think of this system, and would you change it at all?
I love it. I think it's great. It's 2 weeks. It's kind of like the Goldilocks of ballot, you know, early voting. It's not too much, but it's not too little. My goal is to make sure that all Missourians can vote. And early voting is a way to do that. And it's a safe way to do that. We can control the, you know, working with the county clerks to control the systems and the functionality in the same way that we would on election day. It's just for 14 days instead of one day. So I'm very in favor of early voting for 2 weeks.
So currently, if you end up sending a ballot either through the mail or you drop it off to a local election official, you have to check off an excuse. Oh, yeah, you know what's coming.
Yeah.
anybody who's listened to the show is probably sick of me making this point, but it's a useless system. It is unenforceable. And I actually think it's, I'm going to just even be more candid. I think that it is like giving the impression to voters that if they have to be 100% honest here, or they're going to go to jail. When in reality, if you mark down that you're at work at a certain day, you're going to be out of town and you're not, nothing will happen to you. Why should we keep this system? It doesn't make any sense.
So to be honest, it doesn't make sense, does it?
No.
So
it doesn't. And just keep going.
Well, you know, now that we have early voting, there is an expanded way to vote. So if you're out of town for on election day, you know, maybe you're somebody who goes to on a long vacation. Okay, then you need to mail in your ballot another way. But I'm a hardcore conservative. So when there are inefficiencies and duplicative processes and processes that don't make sense anymore, I want to get rid of them. That is my natural inclination as a conservative.
So another part of that law that implemented that early voting period also included a photo ID requirement, a state-issued, government-issued photo ID requirement for voting. Mm-hmm. Do you agree with that, or do you feel like the way, you know, do you think the structure of it has worked well so far?
I do. That is part of keeping our elections secure. You know, I'm sure that you've heard from a lot of different people. You know, a lot of us are talking about this on the campaign trail about non-citizens voting and only Missouri citizens voting. That's really important. I think it's probably the one thing eight of us agree on. And it's just one check in the system to make sure that you know, only Missouri citizens are voting in our elections.
What exactly is objectionable about somebody with a green card voting in local elections?
I see that as somebody who's lived in San Francisco. I see that as a slippery slope. So in San Francisco, you do not have to be a citizen if you have a kid in the school. So I can see how you would say, well, you pay taxes here, you work here, you are invested in the community. So, but where does that end? You know, I think that you have to be a citizen to vote in Missouri's elections. And that's just my stance. And I've seen what happens when you kind of open up the door to, oh, well, maybe green card. Oh, well, and then it's just a free for all.
Yeah. Now, this is a different question that I've been asking because I heard about this recently. So there are people in this race who are talking about like auditing the rolls to make sure undocumented immigrants aren't voting. Do I have proof that that's happening? No. Could it have happened? Anything could happen. But you know what does happen all the time? Legal immigrants registering to vote accidentally.
Yes.
And then their citizenship could be in their future citizenship could actually be in jeopardy. And if they vote, they get automatically deported, according to this person I talked with. Is there something as Secretary of State you could do to raise public awareness to people who are legal immigrants that, no, do not register to vote until you are an American citizen?
So, I mean, any type of education campaign like that would solve both of those problems. It would solve, you know, people. We want to make sure that they don't register to vote because we don't want the system overloaded, you know, and also it's illegal. I think what you might be referring to is in Ohio, they just did Secretary Frank LaRose, who's very, very conservative, is a leader in the Secretary of State community. He just did a huge audit of voter rolls. And I think there were like 100 non-citizens registered, a tiny, tiny fraction.
And of that 100, were they legal immigrants? I would imagine like 99% of them were legal. Because like, if you are in the country illegally, why would you go to a governmental entity and give your identifying information, including your address and your name? Like,
right.
That...
So he, that's exactly what, you know, he was, again, very conservative, very proponent of election integrity, and a leader on this issue nationally. And he was very, very forthright in saying many times this is an accident. Many, many times this is not sinister. It is not, you know, people trying to come in and take advantage of our elections. And I think that that is important to recognize. However, or rather, and people are so angry about the border. I'm angry about the border. And I think that's a lot where this stems from, is illegal immigration is destroying our country. Every state is a border state. Biden has been absolutely a joke on immigration policy. And my response to that is, as a candidate, the best thing that you can do to fight illegal immigration is elect Donald Trump. As Secretary of State, I would make sure that our systems are strong enough to be able to, and resilient enough to be able to withstand any increase in potential illegal immigration.
Last question before I let you go. Mm-hmm. The non-citizen ban is in an initiative that would ban ranked choice voting. Mm-hmm. We don't have ranked choice voting, and this initiative does not undo approval voting, which is in St. Louis.
Right.
What do you think of that initiative, and would, and are you going to support it when you go to the ballot?
Yeah, you know, I'm not the biggest fan of ranked choice voting. It can be, but I'm also not a huge fan of just banning things. But I you know, wouldn't be opposed to that. I will say, though, there, that other section of the amendment, the non-citizens voting, you know, the legislature really dropped a ball because they forgot to put in an enforcement mechanism. So there's no new way to actually audit the voter rolls. So just to kind of do an apples to oranges comparison, the legislature, when they want the attorney general to be really involved in something, they can give the attorney general original concurrent jurisdiction, which he doesn't usually have at baseline, or she doesn't usually have at baseline. They didn't do that in this, what is it, SJR 78?
Mm-hmm.
So for me, that's just another example of the Missouri legislature dropping the ball, only doing half their job in saying non-citizens can't vote, but giving the Secretary of State no new powers to actually do anything about it.
Well, that's all the time we have. Thank you so much, Jamie Corley, for being on the show. Politically Speaking is a product of St. Louis Public Radio, which is a part of the University of Missouri St. Louis. You can find all of our work about the election at stlpr.org. And Jamie Corley, where can people find you on the internet about your campaign, where you want to be found?
Yeah. CorleyFromMissouri.com. And that can get you to all the right places.
All right. Thank you so much. And until next time, so long. Politically Speaking is produced by Jason Rosenbaum, Rachel Lippman, and me, Sarah Kellogg. The show is edited by Fred Ehrlich. Read all of our coverage at stlpr.org. And if you haven't already, make sure to subscribe to Politically Speaking by searching the term Politically Speaking on Apple Podcasts.
From St. Louis Public Radio. This is Politically Speaking.